And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Early Morning Scoop here on your number one talk radio station, and specifically, waking you up a little bit in terms of the rest of the midway point of this week, since we obviously have achieved the midway point on this particular last, well, it's not the last week per se, because there's still like 4 days left next week, but it ultimately still does mean that we are, busy heading towards what would be the end of the seventh month in 2025. Now, just before we always start off with our discussions here on the Early Morning Scoop, do remember, dear listeners, for those of you that are part of our subscription process or platform regarding the Villager e-paper, do remember to just, if as you wake up and you are a subscriber to that particular platform of ours, that you can have a look within your inbox and obviously just gander through the particular talking points that I will cover a little bit later in this morning's particular session of the Early Morning Scoop. Well, a little bit later from now. And just so that you can also just, have a good read before you go about the rest of your day. For those of you that are not part of the subscription process or have not subscribed as yet, and you would like to, the steps are pretty easy and pretty simple and straightforward to follow. All you've got to do is just send us a text via WhatsApp, not SMS, please, via WhatsApp to the number 081-200-4144. All you've got to do is just say subscribe in it, and remember to save the contact details so that it does not look like we are spamming you in any particular way, that you recognize ultimately this is a particular update or a number that updates you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. In terms of staying tuned to your favorite talk, to your favorite talk show, as well as also here, to your favorite radio station here being Eagle FM, do remember, dear listeners, you can check us out specifically on the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on from both your Android and Apple platforms. The second scenario is obviously you can also listen to us digitally, the other digital format, which is through the Eagle FM website. That's purely just based upon your data plan, specifically from your service provider. And remember to consult our radio frequency map, which you will find in the Villager e-paper, as well as also on our social media, which can consult you in terms of wherever you find yourself. You just have a look there in terms of the frequency itself. Now, we'll quickly take a short break. We'll come back right after that. Here, stepping into the what would be the shortened version in terms of the very special edition of the Early Morning Scoop for this Wednesday session, primarily where we will be breaking up the various talking points that emanate from the National Development Plan 6 and its announcement that happened back on Monday. Now, this is as we see ourselves in this morning, just to give you a little bit of a snippet. We'll be talking to a specific economist in terms of citing the various sectoral aspects, as well as also a dimension of whether or not there is optimism. A second engagement with another economist will be based upon a similar particular optimism analysis, however branching out into other particular aspects with regards to what the overall indication and this particular developmental next 5-year period speaks towards Namibia's own particular growth. We get a little bit more focused in terms of going into a food and agricultural discussion, and based upon nutrition and the supplies of food to the broader Namibian population in this particular framework of the NDP6, where we'll be talking to another civil society representative on that. And finally, we'll be talking to an entertainer, someone coming through from the entertainment sector, which forms part of the arts culture sector within the National Development Plan 6, that obviously has now been getting all the particular attention with regards through the direct ministry that is in charge of trying to develop that sector to its best potential or its best scenario in terms of being at an optimal value addition, if that is the term that we can apply, and that specifically be the, being the super ministry of MESAC. We won't go through all the names right now, dear listeners, because we got to condense it quickly. And specifically, having a look at all those particular insights in terms of also factoring into the developments that we will contain, that we've contained in the Villager ePaper platform, we will get into it after all these particular engagements. However, we first start off with the international segment right after this short break.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Coming back there from the very abrupt and very short break that we took right there, and getting into the start of this morning's particular program in earnest of the early morning scoop. Now, so heading into the international segment, as we obviously always work from a, you know, more unconventional perspective, we see in, head into the global climate discussion, obviously, as the some of the particular developments around the world indicates towards the aspects of the impact on small island nations, specifically as small and low-lying islands are on the front line of the battle against climate change. Now, they are disproportionately impacted by rising sea levels, coastal erosion, and increasingly frequent and intense storm surges. This is also what has happened, that a third of the Tuvalu Island nation's population have applied to migrate to Australia. We take a listen to this particular report.
Line in the battle against climate change. They're disproportionately impacted by rising sea levels, coastal erosion, and more frequent and intense storm surges. That's why over a third of the population of the tiny Pacific nation of Tuvalu have applied to migrate to Australia. They hope to make the move on a so-called climate visa, a landmark scheme designed to help people escape the islands as they become increasingly uninhabitable. Tuvalu's population of 11,000 lives on atolls scattered across the Pacific. That's one of the countries most at risk from the effects of climate change. Scientists fear it could be underwater within 35 years. Let's bring in Gaia Vince. She's an award-winning science writer and author. Her latest book is called Nomad Century, How Climate Migration Will Reshape Our World. Gaia, welcome to DW. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, we heard that there are thousands of Tuvaluans want to leave their homeland, but the Australian scheme will actually only grant 280 climate visas. What happens to the rest of the applicants?
Well, this is an agreement by which people apply every year. So it's 280 a year. Actually, the number, the ballot was opened around a month ago and it closed on Friday, and already more than 5,000 have applied. So almost half the population has applied for this visa, but it's estimated, in 10 years, around 40% of the population may have moved to Australia. And this is a climate agreement which is remarkable, not because it's the first such agreement, but because it's the first one which is looking at relocating the entire population of a nation to a safer other nation due to climate change.
Mm-hmm. Climate change is threatening already today the lives and livelihoods of millions of people around the globe. And, you know, already today, a huge driver of displacement. You wrote a book on the topic. So tell me, how will climate migration reshape our world?
Yes, well, I mean, it's already happening. We're seeing last year some 2 million people in Europe were affected by drought, for example. If you think about 200 people from, or 280 or whatever, from Tuvalu are going to Australia, I mean, around 200 people died in floods in Valencia just last year. You know, so these are very small numbers, and this agreement is a tiny drop in the ocean, but it is significant because, of course, every life counts. And what we're seeing as the temperature rises, as more energy gets locked into the atmosphere, we're seeing far more extreme weather conditions. And what's happening is parts of the world are becoming unlivable, and that will only increase as the decades go. So, you know, we are expecting the most severe events, the most unlivable conditions are already being felt in the tropics, and that tropical band of unlivability will expand further north and south. And the more livable places, and these are not places which will be unaffected by climate change, but they're places that are better able to adapt, they will be in the north. So we are going to see, we're already seeing this movement of life, of plants, of animals, of people, of capital, investments, agriculture, industry, all of human activity will start to move north. And it's something which we need to prepare for. It can bring huge opportunities to countries in the north that are suffering falling birth rates. But it also comes with a lot of challenges. And we are seeing a lot of right-wing rhetoric that is very anti-migration at the moment.
Yeah. How can the world prepare for this kind of scenario?
Well, there are many ways, and agreements like the one that Australia and Tuvalu have reached is one way. We need to start thinking very urgently about what it means when a country loses sovereignty, you know, when a place, a territory no longer exists. What does happen to that sovereignty? What happens to Pacific Island nations, Indian, low-lying Indian Ocean atolls? What happens when a third of the country, places like Bangladesh, become unlivable? We need to think about how these people are best relocated. It's much better to do it in a managed way, in a sensible, planned way, before that emergency happens, before we're looking at evacuations, so that we can help provide those industrial bases, that new housing. We can replan the demographics of our world, which at the moment in the northern nations is very aging. There are lots of care needs. There isn't that youthful labor force to bring in the taxes that can help keep that social contract going. And at the same time, there's huge potential in some of the most risky places on our planet, places where the population is still young and vibrant and has that potential to, you know, that human potential for labor, for ingenuity to really bring forth what are the next generation, the 21st generation human bases that we're going to have. New cities are going to have to be built, and in the far north, and they will need populations.
Now, heading over into our next item in terms of in our international news segment, we take a look specifically as one of Namibia's largest development partners, Germany's economy, is set to receive over 630 billion euros in the next 3 years in terms of investments. For that, we have a listen to this particular report.
Announced plans to invest a total of over 630 billion euros in the country in the next 3 years. While some of the funds had already been pledged, the package also includes fresh capital for the German economy. The announcement came just hours before German Chancellor Friedrich Merz welcomed CEOs and other representatives from around half of those companies at the Chancellery in Berlin. Among them were German companies like Siemens and Deutsche Bank, as well as the U.S. investment firm BlackRock, where Merz served as a board member for several years before returning to politics. In a statement, the Chancellor praised the initiative.
The message we are sending is very clear. Germany is back. It is once again worth investing in Germany. We are not an economy of the past, but of the present and above all of the future. This government wants to move Germany forward again. We want to make investments possible in new technologies and innovations, and with that, create the foundation for new strength, new growth, and prosperity for all.
Well, for more on this, we're joined by Kate Ferguson from DW Business. Now, 630 billion euros, it sounds like a lot. It all sounds like good news. What did this meeting set out to achieve?
Well, the point of this meeting really was to showcase the economic transformation that is happening in Germany right now. As you heard from Friedrich Merz just now, the message really from both politics and business was that Germany is back, it's ready to be innovative and competitive again. We heard from Siemens CEO Roland Busch as well. He spoke of big potential in the area of AI, especially in industry and in healthcare. So I think what we're seeing really is a tonal shift towards optimism at a really critical time for the German economy. We've been in recession here for 2 years. Some of the country's key industries like cars and pharmaceuticals are facing massive challenges, whether that's from tariffs in the United States or intense competition from China. So I think the purpose really was to inject a bit of confidence, momentum, and to present business and politics as largely aligned.
Now, we constantly hear about thousands of people losing their jobs in also sectors of German industry. How quickly can we expect to feel the effects of this investment that we've just been hearing?
Yeah, well, we are already seeing some movement. So Germany's train operator, Deutsche Bahn, for example, has already started modernizing its rail infrastructure. If I give you a little example that's quite local, Rolls-Royce has a factory outside of Berlin in Brandenburg. It has been increasing production of engines for military aircraft as well as generating hydrogen-powered aircraft. So this is the kind of investment Germany wants, high-tech, future-oriented, combining both defense and climate. That said, though, money alone isn't enough. And a lot of business leaders will say if we don't see reforms soon, then we might as well see months, if not years, of stagnation. They want faster approval processes. They want less red tape. They want access to cheaper energy. So a lot of this will depend on the implementation.
And all of which Friedrich Merz has promised. He just needs to deliver now. Now, will this investment have an effect beyond Germany?
Yeah, this really depends on your outlook. So Germany is the engine of growth in Europe. Mm-hmm. So if things pick up here, that could generally be good news for the rest of the continent. There are some risks, though, because Germany has always been the financial anchor of Europe. It has been especially disciplined when it comes to spending. Its bonds are considered the safest haven you can get. If this spending doesn't pay off and German debt is considered less lucrative or less reliable than before, that could really affect confidence in other markets. On the other hand, if this shift in Germany leads to more integration in Europe, particularly in capital markets, if it's easier for investors to move their money from one country to the next, that could be a real turning point for the positive for both Germany and Europe as a whole. So we'll see.
And on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of the international news segment. Yes, it was pretty brief. However, it allows us to step over into the local news segment right after this short break.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe kike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okwene ujendi fenawa nukumona oija mwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali. Ileko berewa nora hetatu natu mbali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And coming back there from the quick break, dear listeners, obviously you are in the company of your number one talk radio station, specifically that being Eagle FM, and this is the Early Morning Scoop here on your Wednesday morning session. Now we step into, or we've now transitioned into the local news segment, specifically with the insightful discussions, obviously, that have to come through from the as promised, in terms of the short preview that I provided just before we began with the international news segment. We start off with the first one in terms of taking a broader look in terms of each of the, of understanding each role that each sector has to play in the development of the country in the next 5-year period of the National Development Plan 6. And this is where we speak to various stakeholders in terms of what this particularly translates to for the everyday person. Now, from sectoral analysis to individual industry perspectives, join us this particular morning as we look into the path that Namibia has to take in the next 5-year cycle up to 2030. Now, we take a deep dive from the get-go with a discussion with Almander Janssen from the investment firm Simonis Storm on what the overall picture translates to for the country. We have a listen to this particular engagement. And welcome this particular morning, dear listeners, as we obviously look at or look deeper into the recently announced, which was on Monday, the National Development Plan 6 initiative or roadmap, if we should rather use that term, that was made, that was announced by the President as well as also the Director General of the National Planning Commission. And to specifically help us in our discussion and actually dissect certain particular components of the announcement that took place on Monday, I am joined on air by Mr. Almandro Janssen from Simonis Storm, who in his own right ultimately also can give us a little bit of insights into what we are technically looking at for the next 5 years. Mr. Janssen, thank you, and thank you for taking the time and to talk to us and our listeners.
No, thank you so much for having me.
100%, 100%. If we start off on our first particular sort of like dimension, there obviously was already some sort of analysis that that you yourself had done, you and Simonis Storm, regarding the recently announced National Development Plan, but our particular scenario that we want to look at is, you know, trying to break it up, make it a little bit more sort of like digestible for the listeners and also for the layperson on the ground. Obviously, this is the sixth edition of this National Development Plan. And if we look at sort of like this next 5-year period, I don't know if we can actually translate it to five, but it has an aspect of optimism in it. If we look at this particular picture, Almandro, is it a picture of optimism versus the previous NDPs, or do we have to look into each aspect, each pillar of the plan to understand its unique dimensions?
Yeah, so from the get-go, if you look at it from the start, it looks more grounded and more urgent when it comes to optimism compared to what the previous plan showed. Unlike the previous plan, it's more focused on the goals that need to be obtained, but also I think the fine print is that it's also rooted in the deliverance and the measured accountability. They did say that they're going to give frequent reports on what's going to happen for this. Mm. And I think it's also the fact that it's the tone of it. It's way more decisive. It's more clear. And you can really see that the implementation of this is going to be in a structural way, mm. but it's also around about the uniqueness of it. It's got each pillar that was pointed out was the emphasis on the industrial transformation. So mm. more or less just for economic growth. And then number two is that the youth skill upskillment and the service access. So it's really just showing, okay, we're looking at the youth and ensuring that the service delivery is up to standard where it needs to be. But then the other two pillars are climate resilience mm. and also governance reform and these areas that have previously been underdeveloped in execution.
Mm.
So I think it's them showing this. It's really showing good optimism. And also I think the important part for us is that it's that accountability part that they're also putting attached, that they're going to give frequent reports back on, okay, this is our progress, this is what we've done. So I think it's really, really a step in the right direction.
At the same particular sign, at the same particular time, Almandro, we're still staying under this particular concept of our first question, you know, the optimism picture. The President herself provided, with the launch of the NDP 6, sort of like her feedback of the first 100 days in office, which obviously also there was a whole bunch of moves, maneuvers, developments, announcements, and talking points also stemming from that.
Can we also factor in the track record between 21 March up to now, which was literally yesterday, 21 July, as sort of like, you know, some of these things being put in motion so that Namibians can also say, okay, there was a track record of developments taking place, for example, that gives or signals towards what we need to look at and track in NDP 6 as it runs off to 2030?
Yeah, so I think already we can already see what has been implemented from the get-go of what's been happening and what's been playing out, especially we've seen in the tourism sector. There has been a lot of activity when it comes to the visa regime and what's been playing out there and how much it's brought in. So we're already seeing that the implementation of what's been put out there has already a good track record, and we're also seeing that plans are being put out previously of the housing and the new hospitals of new hospitals, also getting new ambulances. So there's really plans being in place, and we can already see in the first 100 days of how governance is also being the main thing of making sure that government reform is in the main front. Whatever is not supposed to be there is being cleared out, and I really think it's moving in the right direction.
I now want us to you know, cascade into our next particular question, because now we're getting like into the sectoral if I don't want to say value proposition because it makes it sound too business-like, but more like an aspect in terms of what each sector can play. Obviously, the biggest sector in Namibia in terms of its particular weight and its importance is the mining sector. What role do we see, or could we?
We'll quickly take a short break and come back right after this.
Warm up with Red Hot Deals at WB. Get 750 gram CNB mayo for only $37.99 with SmartBuy. 2 times 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken for $139.99 with SmartBuy. 5 kg Polana elbows or mac for just $122.99. And 2.2 kg surf hand wash powder for only $49.99. See all our July month-end specials at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
We come back from the quick break, dear listeners, and we continue with the audio and with the discussion where we left off.
As sort of like the first particularly important sector that seems, it should tell any reader that this seems to be like the least developed in the scenario, 21 July, as sort of like, you know, some of these things being put in motion so that Namibians can also say, okay, there was a track record of developments taking place, for example, that gives or signals towards what we need to look at and track in NDP 6 as it runs off to 2030.
Yeah, so I think already we can already see what has been implemented from the get-go of what's been happening and what's been playing out, especially we've seen in the tourism sector. There has been a lot of activity when it comes to the visa regime and what's been playing out there and how it's brought in. So we're already seeing that the implementation of what's been put out there has already a good track record, and we're also seeing that plans are being put out previously of the housing and the new hospitals of the new hospitals also getting new ambulances. So there's really plans being in place, and we can already see in the first 100 days of how governance is also being the main thing of making sure that government reform is in the main front. Whatever is not supposed to be there is being cleared out, and I really think it's moving in the right direction.
I now want us to you know, cascade into our next particular question, because now we're getting like into the sectoral if I don't want to say value proposition because it makes it sound too business-like, but more like an aspect in terms of what each sector can play. Obviously, the biggest sector in Namibia in terms of its particular weight and its importance is the mining sector. What role do we see, or could we anticipate, or could we see the mining sector play in this overall particular approach of achieving these launch goals? Even though, mind you, that the first pillar, the economic growth one, it expands a lot into the agricultural sector as sort of like the first particularly important sector that seems, it should tell any reader, that this seems to be like the least developed in the scenario. But we all know that mining has played a very consistent role in Namibia's particular economic fortunes. What can we see from that sector itself in future going into the next 5 years?
Yeah, we've really seen that the mining sector has really been contributing over the years. It's been the backbone for Namibia over as long as you can think about it. But it's really, I think the mining should be a change of, it's not just supposed to be a generator of revenue, but also a leverage that needs to be used for structural reform. Especially when it comes to new legislation that needs to be implemented of ensuring that we have local ownership, but also beneficiary in-house, in-country, to reduce raw export dependency. We've really seen Namibia has gotten a good trade balance of late. We've seen that there's been a surplus where Namibia is exporting more than it's importing. But the big concern was still that raw exports is not being value-added, and I think that's what they're planning to do with the domestic value chain, to ensure that the processing of minerals are happening locally, to ensure that it boosts jobs, local employers are being upskilled, and also for SMEs to ensure that their growth in this, in the supporting of the mining sector. But also, I think the mining, or what they're also trying to do with the mining sector, is also to bring a fiscal, almost a fiscal buffer, to ensure that when going forward, we're making sure that the mining royalties, the taxes, the investment flows that are coming in from various streams is also being allocated to public investments, such as you mentioned, the health, education, and infrastructure. So not just making sure that the mining is bringing revenue, but it's also being the revenue is being redirected somewhere else. So I think that's the role, more or less, what the mining sector will be playing, more macroeconomic stability in that sector, Namibia.
And obviously, not taking away, you know, that internationally we also have the volatility that persists. Obviously, that is being transmitted from the U.S., obviously through the U.S. President Donald Trump's particular policies and his particular takes on how the rest of the world, you know, has sort of like been bullying the U.S. But if we look at that particular climate, Almandro, I just wanted to understand specifically that, or not just me, the listeners also, obviously it sounds all good and well for Namibia to setting its own particular, you know, targeted goals through the NDP 6. But if we look at ultimately what is the major aim coming through from a large economic powerhouse like the US, would there be some sort of a caution that we have to, you know, sort of like be aware of? Because the mining sector is one of the sectors that are the most exposed to international development, specifically when it comes from other countries and their policies and financial particular influences, and not something that Namibia can say independently, you know what, we don't care whatever particular developments happen in the international raw materials or raw minerals sectors. Is there something that also has to be factored into?
Yeah, I think obviously whatever happens in the U.S. has a play on what happens here in Namibia and South Africa. So we're really, really like closely linked to South Africa, and currency peg between the Namibian dollar and the South African rand also plays a big part. So recently Trump mentioned that he's going to impose a 30% tariff on South African goods. So that also causes depreciation of the rand, and that obviously affects us. So depreciation of the rand, when it comes to exports for us, it's a good way of looking at it, because it means that our
exports, yeah.
Yes, our exports are at a higher value. But when it comes to import, that depreciation of the rand, it affects us. So it means that imports are coming more expensive for us. We import a lot of, at this moment in time, a lot of petroleum oils. So our fuel really comes in at a big portion of it. And also our vehicles. Vehicles is a big portion that we import from South Africa. So, and South Africa having a close link to the U.S. when it comes to vehicles, a lot of factories in the Eastern Cape in South Africa are looking at halting production and also slowing down the masses that they're going to produce. So that has a direct effect in Namibia when it comes to the vehicle market, but also more for what when it comes to certain minerals being demanded. If we supply a lot of minerals to these factories, so that's also a play that we need to look at it. Okay, it's being scaled down. Does that mean there's going to be less demand for our minerals when it comes to all of this? So this is all we need to be consideration. We can't just sit back and think, oh, this is not going to affect us. Whatever Trump does affects South Africa, and then obviously that also catapults into our economy. So that's what we need to look at.
And then if we now cascade from the mining sector or just singular sector, you know, a viewpoint, Almandro, I want you to also, you know, the following. I know it's a little bit of a list that I supplied you with, but if we work into the other sectors, because the thinking that I've seen specifically from the potential of tourism to be a more, not a independent powerhouse from the rest of the economy in terms of Namibia's particular pathway to rebuilding from COVID-19, but rather it has that very quick and adaptive growth element to it. If we look at tourism, what role can tourism play in this particular discussion in the NDP6?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, tourism has been really also a backbone for Namibia coming in over the years. Namibia has really been an attractive destination when it comes to tourism. And we've recently seen that there's been a pickup in higher net worth individuals traveling to Namibia. And especially for what the lodges and all of the various tourist attractions provide for these high net individuals. It also just shows that Namibia's resilience when it comes to possibly a global, not necessarily a global pandemic, but a global downfall, people are still going to want to travel regardless of their net worth. So the net worth individuals, they're still going to travel because at the end of the day, I still have money in my pocket. And all of this is going to be beneficial for Namibia because at the end of the day, tourism is a big play in Namibia. But we've also seen that there's been a positive response to the ones that receive the visas and the one that issued the visas of late. The visa system has really been good, and we've seen that in 3 months it's generated about 171 million for when it comes to the visas on arrival. So it's really a good response in that. So Namibia is really setting itself up in the future or in the next 5 years to become a tourism, more of a tourism hotspot. And it was something that we raised previously of a concern with us. If we don't sort out the visa regime in a possibility, we could see that if a tourist comes in and says, listen, if it's so restricted to going to Namibia, Botswana, South Africa, and Angola is all in close proximity, why don't I just go to them? So I think they're really ironing out all the issues that they previously had, and it's really going to see that we're going to see that the national tourism plan is going to go into play and really just benefit the whole of Namibia, if you can put it in that way.
And if we now bounce over to a sector that ultimately has had a little bit of a low in terms of its particular existence, has been construction. Obviously, that means a scenario of obviously urbanization, demand for properties and urban. What role can we potentially look at, even though other sectors could be operating in pretty positive numbers, like tourism and mining, but construction is sometimes also viewed as sort of like that other peripheral, potentially untapped or rather forgotten sector. Could we see a potential resurgence or not?
Yeah, so from the beginning of the year, we've been optimistic when it comes to the construction sector. It's just because of the interest rate environment that we are. We are in a very low interest rate environment. Bank of Namibia has been holding the rate steady. So we do still believe there's one more rate cut of 25 basis points in the pipeline. And this is, construction is very sensitive to monetary policy environment. So we could see that playing out, that we still believe there's still a lot of growth in construction, especially with the government's development budget for various projects when it comes to electricity, water, and all of that already being out in play. And also now with affordable housing coming into play, and also looking at, I saw that they're looking at student accommodation. So all of that being in the pipeline means that there needs, something needs to be happening. And this will obviously just benefit the construction sector and also just boost job creation when it comes to this, and just having almost a multiplier effect in the whole of Namibia.
And obviously flowing over from construction, but before I flow over from construction, Almandro, I just wanted to ask you, in terms of the low interest rate regime that you cited a little bit earlier, in comparison to what or comparison to whom do we view this particular position of low interest rate regime?
Like, even if you look at it, yes, not necessarily low interest rate regime, but more or less compared to what South Africa. South Africa's interest rate is sitting at 7.25, Namibia is sitting at 6.75. So there is a little bit of a difference between the two, so making borrowing much cheaper for our businesses and households here in Namibia. And like we said, if there's one more rate cut of 25 basis points, bring it down to 6.5, that's still a relatively lower interest rate of what we've seen previously. So it really encourages a lot of more borrowing, and it also just has a knock-on effect into the economy, with businesses taking on more borrowing and making more of that money available. And it also just creates jobs at the end of the day, because businesses have more money on hand and they can utilize this to use it at different departments and just upscale and so on.
Yeah, exactly. And then if we take a look at manufacturing, that obviously has a whole new dimension to it, the green sector or the green hydrogen sector. I just wanted to factor in the Almandro that recently I spoke to some youth-based beneficiaries regarding the various particular skills development programs regarding green hydrogen and its affiliate sectors. Is that many of them, specifically those in the advanced degree and TVET scenarios in the training, cite that this is, and they've confirmed that this is manufacturing in the green hydrogen sector. If we look at the possible full-scale rollout of that sector in the Namibian economy in the next 5 years up to 2030, because they are targeting 2030, what could you see in these particular developments of manufacturing's prowess or its position against the other sectors in terms of becoming a dominant sector?
Yeah, so we've really seen that green hydrogen has been something that's been talked about a lot, and it's been at the forefront. And recently I also saw that not necessarily green hydrogen, but the hydrogen aspect of it has been used in development for vessels. So they're looking at using vessels for running off hydrogen, and that's a step. It's a collaboration between a Dutch company and Namport. So that's already a collaboration that we're seeing, that we're really using this manufacturing of what's happening in Namibia to use that to our advantage for future, for technology and upskilling, and making sure that we, when it comes to technology and infrastructure, we're using that to propel ourselves forward. So I really think it's really a good advancement for Namibia to ensure that, listen, we're not going to stand back anymore and let others do what we have the resources. We're going to utilize everything and make sure that we advance our industrialization and also the infrastructure that can come from all of this. So I really think it's moving in the right direction. I mean, kudos to them for already having scholarships and or programs where the youth can learn from this and moving in the right direction. I think it should be utilized in the same way for the mining, for the oil and gas, because I think it's something that can really be advancement for Namibia, especially when it comes to upskilling, when it comes to these sectors, because once the companies leave, what are we left with? We need to have that base of what are we left with the skill set and the knowledge of what's exactly at play.
Exactly. And then if I'm going to lump the last two sectors together, Almandro, in terms of just if we look at financial services, which they obviously are not as obvious as the other two sectors or the other sectors that I've mentioned, but financial services, their role in this next 5 year period, and specifically also if we look at the retail sector, that's food and the other particular retail outlets and subsectors within the retail sector. How would these then assist in the overall developmental aspect of the next 5 year period of the NTP6?
Yeah, definitely think when it comes to the financial sector, it needs to really be one way it supports SMEs, their development, and to make sure that they also bringing them to the party and making sure that they are playing a role in all of these developments. So necessary is funding and all of that, so that they need to make sure that the loans are being put out to them, but also for youth funding. A lot of youth and entrepreneurs see opportunities for this, for various projects that could go hand in hand with the infrastructure projects, but also with the green energy products that are being put out there. So we really need to look at that the financial sector really supports the SME development, but also the youth development, and also the bigger scale projects to ensure that, listen, let's be a part of this. Let's have our role to play in this, and making sure that we're moving in the right direction when it comes to all of these plans that are being utilized. And then when we look at the retail side, is that we need to start looking at our own in-house food security and green schemes. Like, food security is going to be a big thing that's going to be playing out in the next few years, and we need to make sure that, listen, in-house we can sort out Namibia as a whole to ensure that, listen, we can look after our country and make sure that we feed enough everyone. But it also plays a critical role when it comes to job creation. Mm-hmm. Retail is also a big job creation. So we're looking at that chain of job creation when it comes to retail. So I think these are two also going to play a critical role in all of this.
Exactly. Finally, Almandro, we get into I sometimes consider them to be the two negative-oriented sectors. That is obviously the education and health sectors, which are two human development sectors. If we look at how these two sectors have to position themselves, obviously, to support the discussions that you and I have now just, you know, completed above them, how would education and health position itself in the broader scheme of things for the NDP6? Because we're obviously talking about education system being in place, but also how do you maintain a healthy workforce or an overall healthy population?
Yeah, so I think from the get-go, we saw human capital development was at the forefront of the center of everything to make sure that this transformation of the plan of the sixth plan does come to execution. And I think education was the one, I think, that was really stood out for everyone, was the free public tertiary education that's going to be probably from 2026.
Yeah.
This will also help bridge the skills mismatch that's currently in the market of what we're seeing of how exactly of not everyone's able to come to the party when it comes to university or academia, but also to make sure that everyone has a fair base to have this opportunity to do this. But I think another when it comes to education, I think on the job training, so work into the learning framework that they mentioned, was that to place 5,000 graduates annually into internships and having about a 80% retention. So that's already showing that, because I think that's what a lot of graduates struggle with, to have that, just that boost to their career. Listen, let me get an internship and just build off that base. I think a lot of them struggle with that. So I think that's already a good initiative. And then also just the different sectors that are going to be trained when it comes to this, all the VTC colleges and all of that that's going to be in agriculture, energy, and construction. That's already showing that, okay, we're going to focus on academia, but we also need the hard labor people to ensure that, listen, we can't just look at the academia, but the labor-intensive sectors such as agriculture and energy will also be looked after, and making sure that this will bring our industrial and our manufacturing sectors up to standard, more or less.
Exactly. Almandro, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Obviously, this particular breakdown is key for the average, you know, the everyday person. Just a final question, just a query. Is there still something that you would like to add on to what we just highlighted in our discussion, or are you fine with this?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I just think at the end of the day, we've mentioned, there's so much plans put in place and everything has been put out there. And yes, we're speaking about accountability, but at the end of the day, when we five years down the line, we're going to look back and think about, okay, why the execution and everything? So I think a really big thing that I want to reiterate is the execution of this plan, because if we can really execute it to the T, I can really think that Namibia is going to be a powerhouse.
And that specifically highlights some of the sort of like overall analysis that we introduced in terms of there. We're about 7 or 8 minutes out from the top of the hour at 7 a.m. And if you're just waking up, dear listeners, obviously the hope is that you've already had your coffee. For those of you moving about, dropping off some of the kids in terms of any school runs that need to be made, Do tune in to your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM, in terms of where we always provide you with the early morning discussions and analyses in terms of to get your day going. Now, as we step into our second particular talking point on this morning's the early morning scoop, our next particular engagement is with the founder and the chairperson of the Namibia Economic Association's, Mia Gamap, on what the level of optimism and the mood around this particular national development plan speaks towards. Now, Gamap highlighted the contrast of when both and public-private stakeholders and enablers have to work towards a common goal of national development. We take a look in terms of his insights and analyses based upon the launch of the national development plan.
Taking the time specifically, dear listeners, obviously as we take another particular look and another particular angle into the discussion of the recently launched National Development Plan 6 that happened yesterday in Windhoek. Welcoming into this particular discussion, we're taking a look at another angle from a civic society perspective. We welcome Mr. Mia Gamap, who is the chairperson and president of the Namibia Economic Society, which is an NGO operating in Namibia. Just to sort of like give us a different perspective also into the discussion of the recently launched NDP 6. Mr. Gamap, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners. And once again, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for also having me, and I look forward to the discussions, yes.
If we start off specifically, Mr. Gamap, with what obviously happened yesterday, that being that there seems to be a projection of a lot of optimism for this new national development plan phase, which is set to end at 2030. The reason why I asked the optimism question, which is actually our first question, do we identify that there is optimism in this launch of this NDP six phase? And is it something that obviously we can see has any tangible elements to it? Meaning, it's something that we've seen in the last 3 months leading up to yesterday's launch, so that Namibians can say, okay, so this is a new way in terms of how our government will approach all the multiple facets or issues that persist in the country.
Yes, in fact, I have to agree with you. No, there is a sense of an air of exuberance, which is an optimistic outlook. The element of pragmatism, inclusivity, and also an element of a sense of a strategic intent and effect is actually being put forward as a way as to how Her Excellency wants to chart the way forward. Of course, 100 days is a short time for her to be judged on, but I think she has set the right course in terms of where we want to be. There is always this element of people thinking, okay, Vision 2030 has failed, or NDP has failed, or Namibia has failed. But I am actually here to inform you that Vision 2030 has actually been an inspirational and aspirational document that has spent sort of set the kind of an umbrella towards where Namibia needs to go. Of course, the national development plans, have to build upon each other. So I think the fact that she has taken that pragmatic approach of looking at it from the NDP 5 to NDP 6 can actually be justified on the grounds of a change of continuity, changing the direction. It's business is unusual, as she said, and a continuity with a sense of where we want to go, given that 2030 is around the corner. And one also needs to understand one plan needs to build upon the other. So a country without any history, not a country at all.
Mm. So we do need that template of where we were or where we've been building from.
Absolutely. And what makes it more pragmatic and actually contemporary at the moment is that Her Excellency has actually pointed towards, you know, aspects that were wrong in the past that needs to be corrected. But what I'm particularly more impressed about the NDP speaks currently is the focus on execution.
Mm.
Because the implementation, there has been some implementation delays of some of the policies and programs and objectives and milestones that has been put in the previous NDPs. And I think the fact that she has go back to the public and then say 100 days, we have done this, 100 days, we aim to do that, and we are going to go on to that course, is actually really very helpful, because it does set the tone for monitoring and evaluation, and most importantly, an acute performance assessment that needs to be done.
And before we get into the next question, Mr. Kamap, there is something key that you also highlighted just now, which is obviously the feedback of the first 100 days that the president supplied in yesterday's particular launch. And the particular question that pops up immediately, because we've seen, minister, for example, education minister, I actually call her ministry the super ministry because it's so big now. Our Minister Steenkamp. She and her deputy, Deputy Minister Balotti. Then we've had the Minister of Finance, that's now obviously Minister Shifuda. We've seen the Prime Minister himself as well, Prime Minister Ngurare. All of them, and I'm sorry if now not if they hear this particular interview of ours, but all the other ministers, including these that I've mentioned now, they've all been very visual in terms of projects, initiatives, engagement.
We'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and come back right after this.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth. One plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian, passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Coming back there from that short break, dear listeners, we'll quickly step into where we left off with the engagement in terms of the overall view in terms of each and every particular touching point of the National Development Plan 6's launch that recently took place on Monday.
And other particular things that speak directly to a sector, which obviously seems to give the right noise. If I'm now going to use, you know, my field's particular favorite term, the communication element, you know, talking the right talk. But the feedback that the president gave yesterday was about, you know, talking to what the walk was for the past 3 months. What could we see into that particular sort of like aspect? Were some of the things tangible, or is it still like in the process of reaching its tangible phase for every Namibian to see that this feedback is leading to something promising?
Well, you see, one thing that I have to give to Her Excellency currently is that the public reporting that she has done, and she has said, I am reporting back to you as a president and also as a servant in terms of service delivery that you have promised. From that point of view. So, you know, it was a clear tone. It was emphasizing and also with a sense of commitment. And that gave me that optimistic kind of a approach as to how she would like things to be done. because I think for the first 100 days, you know, I mean, with due respect to the former president, have been always sort of a documented facts. But he has come out to say, well, here I am in 100 days. I have promised you certain aspects, especially around economic growth and resilience, and human development, environmental sustainability, and good governance. And these are actually the issues that actually has been inspirationally built into Vision 2030. And these are the issues that we have actually been grappling throughout the NDPs to try and get a sense of where is the bottleneck. But what he has done and what he has taken further is that, firstly, CC has now defined the development state. He's now saying the public and private sector need to work together. So the PPPs, the public-private partnerships, is very crucial. And he's saying that the public sector cannot just grow the economy. Cannot be in charge of the economy. He's saying we need to have, we need to engage the private sector so that we can work together. And she has also mentioned an element of trust to that respect. The second thing that she has really indicated is a sense of, look, we are in 100 days. And you said the ministers went out. I've never seen actually many ministers going out of the country, but they have been touring the region. And they ought to be complimented for that. And they are actually also, you know, being proactive in the issues we are facing. And I think a commendation may be given to them in terms of the hard work that they put in for the 3 months that they were asked. And they were given performance agreements, mind you, in order to execute certain aspects of it. And I think the address that the Excellency gave, there's sort of a tune to that. And and what is particularly, you know, striking me all this is actually the element of emphasis on what they think ought to be the issues that we must address. For example, like you said, the big super ministry, she has been focusing on youth element, you know, giving education, art, and culture, but geared towards youth-centered development, which is actually very, very, very helpful. Of course, there was the issue about the disability that was raised, but I think that is an area that she also indicated will be done. But what I would also like to say in this aspect is that she is on a course, she is on a different course. This is a post-COVID era.
Yeah.
So I think given that, she may be cognition of the green growth, which is the hydrogen element, which I think could have been acknowledged more from the Harambee Prosperity Plan 2. But there's also the element of public address that he gave to the public service about core competency.
Oh, the one of last Friday, yes.
About competency, about execution, and about actually taking care of the people that are coming into their offices, and that it will be business as usual. I also just want to say that, you know, in the past, I have to admit that there used to be a policy paralysis that I think we could have better improved on. But and that has given rise to some implementation delay. And that is actually an issue that I think in terms of getting the economy going seems to have been holding the economy back. I think one area that you always mention as a principle, and I think maybe as an element for all of us in Namibia, is the issue of meritocracy. And the meritocracy that has got a bearing on the intergenerational process of being in the country.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is that there is a sense of an intergenerational gap that I'm seeing that I think may need to be addressed in the sense that the capacity and the competency and no disrespect to the youth. I mean, they are going out the right way. They have been given the ammunition, mm-hmm. and they are going the right way. But I think professionalism and competency and skills gap, those are issues that I think she needs to harness.
Mm-hmm.
And then take it actually from the current crop of the Namibians themselves,
mm.
the skills, in order to close that gap, because I see that capacity and capability of service delivery may actually be compromised if the meritocracy element is not actionable.
Yeah.
And that is one area that I think she ought to, or her excellency may need to be more cognizant of.
If we also look, Mr. Gaumap, specifically at, and it's a good thing you also mentioned the intergenerational, if we can call it like the flow of skills development, and I know there's other things that also factor in there potentially, like ownership aspects, meaning like property, heading into, you know, how to also look after future generations by transference of some aspects of properties and wealth. There is one sort of like overriding or overarching aspect in terms of which is the first pillar, the economic growth one. Because in many cases we are still stuck in the discussion of that the mining sector has to sort out all our issues, even though we do have hidden gems, for example, like the retail sector, which includes food and other aspects, and mm-hmm. some of the other service sectors, like the very large sort of like unrepresented behemoth of tourism. This obviously means that these sectors also now need to, you know, realize that the policy tries to bring them closer, for example, to the planning discussion, so that we develop this overall positive economic picture of Namibia. Is that the kind of translation that you're providing to us in terms of that these hidden gems also now need to be brought to the same spotlight and thus also illustrate their strong points?
Yeah, we actually have to admit one thing. Namibia is a small open economy. And as a small open economy, it, like Singapore, Mauritius, taking those two into account, the reliance on the global factors as well as the reliance on external shocks can actually be problematic for a small open economy. Now, I agree with you that the Namibia's structure or the structure of the Namibian economy has not fundamentally changed. In fact, it is still an extractive, industrial-driven economy.
Mm-hmm.
On minerals and also on raw materials. And because of that, I think I can just set the context that, 1998 financial crisis, for example, the issue of, drought, flood, the COVID, the elements of geopolitical tensions that has got a bearing on it. Because we in Namibia, we are price takers.
Mm.
And whatever price is coming through, whether it is through copper or gold, and whatever price is going down, we cannot cushion ourselves against that.
Mm.
But we can give each other a pat on the back that we have consistently even maintained macroeconomic stability. That's one. But I think where we did not really concentrate more is is the trickle-down effect of the little that we are getting in terms of the proceeds of the raw materials to the outside world, to develop the human standard or having a human standard element of development.
Mm.
And because of that, we have found pockets of growth points within the economy that is not really linked to the inside of the economy, for the economy to structurally transform. So that in itself, I think, is a huge disadvantage for us as an economy. But what he has mentioned, you know, the excellence in terms of the NDP 6 is that he has acknowledged that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a sense of a recovery needed. We have done the 100, right? But there is a sense of a recovery needed. There is also a sense of certain things that are coming in, and I want to keep a closer supervision, especially on oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how the oil and gas is. If it explodes in the face of economy, it can create what we call a dust disease phenomenon, whereby it has to turn the whole macroeconomic balance actually very imbalanced and really cause some element of the economy not actually progressing. So CC acknowledged that there is closer supervision on that one. And then there is also a sense of resilience.
I think
we have to admit that our manufacturing commercial sector and even the private sector in overall, because of this element of trust or mistrust between the government and the private sector, is that the private sector has been more geared towards relying on South Africa. And our exports, even in raw materials, they mentioned goats on hoof, you know? I mean, alive goats, alive chicken, alive sheep, have actually been going to South Africa. And I think there is what I'm encouraging for from her speech is that, you know, that she wants to ensure import substitution possibilities wherever appropriate, whether it is horticulture or agriculture, for example, especially the green schemes. That is very, very crucial for the people in the rural areas. And she has also acknowledged a sense of certain produce that can actually be produced here in the country and be sold to our people in the country, and those people can actually value add that. So there is a sense of acknowledgement in that. But resilience is important because of that.
Exactly. Mr. Gamap, just in terms of our last question, basically, in terms of our discussion for this program, I'm going to skip over the because I already asked the tangible independency aspect, and you've already answered that. But one specific thing that many Namibians now, obviously, since our education system has now, you know, heightened our literacy levels, start seeing that there are great lacks of data points to help plan the economy, even to more advanced levels of economic planning. Do we still see that particular picture persisting? Because I looked at the one chapter, the one about the arts and cultural sector, and it highlights, you know, just to say, you know what, let's help with infrastructure development here, but they don't cite a statistic, they don't cite how small all they say is that the cultural sector contributed 1.5% in terms of economic value in 2023 or 2024. And obviously, this is post-COVID, so it looks good, as opposed to 2019, which possibly could have been a better economic indicator. Do we still need stronger data collection, presentation, and thus distribution of these national data points so that economic planners can see, okay, this is how I can position myself? Or are we for now fine with what we've got?
Actually, you have read my mind, because that is actually the next issue that I wanted to get into. I do have 30 years of experience as an economist. And I can guarantee you one thing. We are over policy. In other words, policies are there, tangible and intangible. Programs are there that derive from those policies. Strategies are actually being implemented in each and every OMS or offices, ministries, agencies. So we have strategies. We have policies. The only drawback that we don't have is a sense of an implementation matrix that we can turn into a monitoring and evaluation tool, so that we can say, okay, let's focus on, and we don't have to do everything in one go. Let's focus on those things that will have the desired impact and strategic effect, not intent, strategic effect. So that those issues that we have identified as key priorities can serve as a measurement tool for us to now go from 100 days to the element of 1 year to the element of 2 and 3 and 4, so that we can then have a trajectory to see where we are going and what we are doing. And to be honest, in comparison to most African economies, we have got a strong national statistics agency. No one doubts our statistics. No one doubts it. Because we know it is actually done with a very clear and succinct and also informative and periodic basis. So from a statistical tool analysis, econometrics, of which I'm very fond of, you know, economics and mathematics combined, medium term expenditure frameworks, Bank of Namibia's strategic vision on monetary policy, Ministry of Finance on fiscal policy, the super ministries. I used to be the chair of many SOEs here, even our CEO of two SOEs, which I can guarantee you, we don't need to overplan. We have to just create an implementation matrix, use it as a monetary evaluation tool, and of course, as she is doing currently, Her Excellency, of course, report back on a periodic basis back to the citizens of this country that this is actually what we have set to do, and these are the key priority areas, and these are the areas where actually impact is being made, even on the ground. Even in the agriculture sector, and also in terms of the industrial base. But we also have to acknowledge one thing, that there can be limitations for a small open economy. There can be limitations. So we don't have to think big, like as if we are Germany, for example, as if United States of America, for example, or as if we are China, for example. No. We have to really just cultivate those ingrown and homegrown key impact-oriented areas of interest. And I'm glad that she has actually narrowed it down. She says that the plan will be available by the end of July, that is the monitoring evaluation. But she emphasized the element of accountability. Also, it emphasized the element of if you are not working, what are you doing there? Like you said, at a public address. So the public service or the public service has to create that enabling environment, not only of service, but ensuring that whatever policies are in place have to be transformed into actions, because they know what to do. Don't just do it.
Exactly.
And I think there is also a need, as you said, I think for a less formalized conferencing or platform between the government and the private sector, because they are not necessarily speaking to each other, and it's just because of trust. That's an element of a social and economic contract that they have not yet drawn up. And if they, the two of them, can come together and given that there could be impending inflows, given that we don't have much time towards 2030, things will flow. And sometimes things, you know, it's just like a car, you know, or like a, how can I say, a aeroplane, whereby it becomes autopilot, you know, it becomes autonomous. But if you set it on the right course, then it will produce an economic engine that can take this economy forward. And that, I can assure you, it can be done. It's just the delays, implementation delays, and also the sense of not knowing where we are going in terms of monitoring the evaluation, even though we have got a plan. Even though we've got a plan and we know what to do and the deliverables are there. So if we can just focus on ensuring the deliverables, that will go a long way. And I think giving credit to excellence, we see on the right course. And I feel very, very much encouraged by that. She just need to, you know, also perhaps also focus more on the element of inclusivity. I think even though it fundamentally has changed with this new administration, they, as you said, the ministers are going region to region. I believe the inclusivity element can even more strengthen, not only in terms of economic, but social and political, so that all three of them speak to each other, and everybody, for unity of purpose, as he says, can look at the same way as he's looking where we're going to go. And we can focus less on the fake news and disinformation, and you know, castigating each other on Facebook and social media. Those things is not needed. You know, as long as we've got a unit to purpose, same goal, implementation metrics, monitoring evaluation tool, performance assessment, performance contracts, and if need be, if people are not working, you know what happens. If there is no meritocracy, you know what happens. If you don't work and you don't want to do your work, then give space to others to do it for the economy to grow.
Now, it leads us into our last 5 minutes here on this morning's particular program. Dear listeners, obviously, you've been in my company since 6 a.m. up until 7:30. And we still have so much to do specifically, but, you know, alas, the particular time frame does not give us sort of like that particular leeway. So we'll just be heading a little bit into the aspect in terms of going through the headlines from the Villager ePaper platform and ultimately having a look at some of the particular talking points that emanate from it. For those of you that are part of our subscription process, you can just also head over and ultimately peruse through the Wednesday edition of The Villager on this being the 23rd of July. Now, as we're about 4 or 5 minutes out from the top of the hour, top of 7:30, because we're about 3 minutes now out from there, just particularly giving you some particular insights of the main talking points from today's The Villager ePaper platform. We've got the discussion coming through on that being the lead story regarding the Neckartal ammonia fertilizer scheme and its particular feasibility discussion, an insightful particular read which also asks one particular dimension of the installation of the dam itself. You can have a read there specifically because there obviously have been many particular, if we can call it social commentary, not social media commentary, social commentary, because it has also come through from the National Assembly platform and many other particular discussions that we've had here on Eagle FM prior to today, in terms of asking questions, in terms of, you know, when is the dam going to play a particular role in one or other particular element, or one or other particular role, or one or other particular aspect specifically in development, upliftment, as well as also contributing to one or other particular activity, which then contributes to overall economic facilitation. Now, this is one such particular talking point. The next particular item, just to give you also a quick gander in terms of the talking points from the Village ePaper platform for today, is one regarding stakeholders pledging to rethink the urban mobility and transport discussion. Remember, that's obviously a discussion that we've also had here on Eagle FM, specifically from the Home Run, and other particular talking points coming through from it here on Eagle FM. Then also citing the aspect of which has been a talking point I've always raised, that being that we've got a agro-processing, agricultural, or a positive agricultural sector that is cut off, literally delinked from the overall economic sphere, and that obviously being the correction services or correctional service in terms of their own particular agricultural processes. They grow their own grains, they grow their own products, mostly vegetal and fresh produce, as well as also they rear, they've got animal husbandry, they produce their own extra additional products from, for example, leather and, you know, the likes, specifically becoming a self-sustainable entity in its own right, even though in its core, the correction services is there to technically, you know, be in a little bit of a punishing setup in terms of any particular wrongdoers that were successfully charged by the justice system, that they're there to ensure that these particular offenders serve out their time. However, we quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we come back right after that, where we'll obviously be saying our goodbyes before the next program takes over from us.
Have you recently turned 18 years of age? Or did you miss the previous voter registration process? Or did you move to a new constituency after the last voter registration? Then this is your chance to register as a voter. The supplementary registration of voters takes place from the 4th until the 19th of August 2025. This process is for eligible Namibian citizens who need to register as a voter for the first time or have relocated from one constituency to another, or who now qualify to vote in the local authority elections. Your civic duty is calling. Answer it. Get involved. Step up. Register to vote.
Coming back there from that specific ad, just in terms of coming back after the short break, and ultimately also signaling that we are at the 7:30 range or time frame, just where we left off, dear listeners, in terms of just citing some of the particular talking points coming through from the Village ePaper platform. Do remember that if you are part of our subscription process, remember that you can have a read through it. If you're not, alternatively, you can find directions specifically on our social media. If you do follow us on the ePaper WhatsApp channel, or specifically that's the Eagle FM, sorry, WhatsApp channel, you will also be able to, you know, follow us there and ultimately also engage in some, well, it'll be a partial engagement, because as you all know, what a WhatsApp channel technically does, it shows you highlights, talking points, snippets, summarize the particular reports and updates, but it really, you know, you've got to go to the full thing in terms of being able to get more for some of the particular pertinent questions that obviously will jump up from your curiosity with regards to the various updates we provide during the course of the day. Now, just to also cite, that obviously does provide us that for this Wednesday's the Village ePaper platform, insightful talking points that obviously emanate through from it. However, we unfortunately have to call it a day for this morning's particular session of my, well, I almost said my Sunday morning take. It's not a Sunday morning. It's not Sunday morning. It's a Wednesday morning. And you and I company here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And stay tuned for the next program to come on after the break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM.
Omudia, with the Kirokabuna, Imatina, Selma, Honora Hita Tuimu, Datundatu, Heari Hamano Tano, Oniaj, Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the
eye.